Now, after a talk on abortion, we have Making Sense of Stem Cell Research and Cloning. So go ahead, Alan.
All right, thank you. Okay, so what you have learned in terms of the discussion on abortion and the arguments and the tactics can just easily transfer and be applied to the issue of stem cell research and cloning. So, for example, as you'll see, there's many things about some versions of stem cell research that I would argue are morally inappropriate, and the way you would defend against them is the same way you would defend against abortion. So that's why these two talks are very closely related, and you can kind of basically carry over the same tactics over to this issue. The only real difference is that you have to understand what stem cell research is and what cloning is and what how it's used and for what purpose, and then you'll kind of be able to just logically make sense of how to integrate the tactics that you've learned in the previous talk. Now, just to kind of give you a little bit of background of where we're looking at, and by the way, you should all have notes on this as well. The body, the human body, is composed of 200 different types, or probably over 200 types, of different specialized cells. So in other words, you know, you have some cells that are hair cells, some that are blood cells, some that are brain cells, bone cells, skin cells, fat cells. You just go on and on, and there's probably 200 different types of these specialized cells. And by specialized, I just mean their function has been determined, and they're surviving currently in that particular state to achieve that function. Now, a stem cell is simply an unspecialized cell. Okay, in other words, a stem cell hasn't yet been given its operating instructions. Right? It's not yet a bone cell or a brain cell or a heart cell or a hair cell. It's unspecialized. It hasn't been given a specific type of function. And that's all a stem cell is. Now, stem cells become specialized cells through a process known as differentiation. And when a stem cell turns into, say, a heart cell, in that particular example, it goes through this process of differentiation. But notice also that when a stem cell does that, it creates another stem cell in the process. So stem cells are self-renewing. They literally create another one of themselves in the process of becoming, say, a heart cell or a brain cell. Okay?
Can I yes. ask a question?
Sure. Right at the get-go.
Do all unspecialized stem cells become specialized? Because you said when a unspecialized stem cell becomes...
Well, all stem cells are unspecialized. So...
To start with,
that's right. All right. But... I'm just saying that when they do become specialized, they also produce another stem cell in the process. That's just kind of how they work. That's why they call them self-renewing. Does that clarify where you're going? Okay.
But I think what you may have asked,
yes.
Does the stem cell remain indefinitely a stem cell, or do they always go on to become specialized?
The stem cell itself kind of ceases to exist in the process of kind of birthing another stem cell and some specialized cell. So in other words, a stem cell will create another unspecialized cell and one specialized cell. That's kind of how they work. But again, the key point I'm trying to make here is that all a stem cell is, you know, we hear a lot about it, but it's not a complex idea. It's just simply, it's not a cell that has any particular function yet, you know. And so it could turn into one of 200 different types of specialized cells.
Now, and just so I understand, that produced stem cell will not then in turn produce a specialized and another stem cell.
The new stem cell?
Yeah, the new stem cell
later on could potentially turn into another stem cell and a specialized cell. So it would create two other daughter cells. That's why they're self-renewing. They just can just kind of keep on going. Okay. Now, there's different kinds of stem cells. Okay, some stem cells are what they call unipotent. And that means that a stem cell that is unipotent, it can only turn into one other type of cell. So, for example, a unipotent stem cell might be only able to turn into, say, a skin cell. There's some stem cells, though, that are multipotent. That means they could turn into a few closely related types of cells. So if you had a multipotent stem cell, maybe this one can turn into either a red blood cell or some other kinds of different blood cells. But it would be limited to just blood cells. And those stem cells that have that potential are called multipotent. Now there's some stem cells, they call them pluripotent. And these are even more powerful because a pluripotent stem cell can turn into any cell type in the human body. Any one of the 200 different types of stem cells. I'm sorry, specialized cells. So a pluripotent stem cell is kind of technically more powerful because it has the potential to turn into any cell in your body. It could turn into a brain cell, or a heart cell, or a bone cell, or a fat cell, or whatever. And so naturally, a pluripotent stem cell is kind of more interesting from a scientific perspective than, say, a multipotent or a unipotent stem cell, because after all, a unipotent can only turn into one kind. You know, big deal. Then there's totipotent stem cells. And these totipotent stem cells not only have the potential to turn into any cell type in your body, but they can also turn into any cell type in the supportive structures of, say, the placenta and the umbilical cord. So those are even more powerful. They can turn into anything that's any possible cell there. So which of these types of stem cells would you think are the most are scientists most interested in using for scientific purposes? Yeah, you would think it would be totipotent stem cells, but it turns out it's not. They actually care mostly about pluripotent stem cells. They're not so much interested in the supportive tissues like the placenta and other things. They don't care about making cells into that. I mean, there might be some, but primarily most embryonic stem cell research is concerned with pluripotent stem cells. Now, where do you get stem cells from? Well, you get them from this round soccer ball-like thing, which is what's called a blastocyst. This is a picture of me when I was just 6 days old in my mother's uterus. I mean, it's not actually a picture of me, but this is what you look like. This is what you look like when you were just 6 days old. In fact, there's a good chance you may have still been in the fallopian tube. So at 6 days old, this is what human beings look like. Now, just kind of an aside, people often say, you Christians are so messed up. You guys think that this is a human being? You want to defend that? It's just a soccer ball. What's the matter with you? Well, it doesn't look human being. It doesn't look like a human being, does it? And what would your answer be? Does it look like a human being?
No, doesn't have to.
Doesn't have to, yeah. Well, here's my answer to that question when they say, does that look like a human being? I say the answer is yes. It looks exactly like a human being. And they look at me kind of puzzled. It looks exactly the way a human being is supposed to look at that stage of development. Human beings aren't supposed to look like you and I when we're 6 days old. We're not supposed to have arms and legs and teeth and body odor. That's not a part of what it means to be a human being at 6 days old. But at that stage of development, that's what we're supposed to look like. And in 2 weeks later, we're going to look different. And that's what a human being is supposed to look like at that stage. And 6 months later, the human being will look even different. And then when it's born, and then when it's 10 and 60 years old or 80 years old or whatever, we look different because all living things look different at different stages of development. I mean, if you saw a monarch, you know, it could just be this like little caterpillar walking around here on the podium. But flash forward a couple weeks later, you know, that thing could be a butterfly moving around. Same thing, but looks same being, a monarch, but it has a different stage of development and looks different at different stages of development. So, does that blastocyst look like a human being? Yes. Looks exactly the way human beings are supposed to look at that stage. Anyways, that was just an aside. So, the top right picture is actually a blastocyst using a scanning electron microscope, which is a very powerful microscope that allows you to look at a blastocyst. So, that is an actual human being taken at 6 days old. The one on the far left, of course, is just a computer-generated drawing. But you notice, it looks basically the same. Now, the bottom right-hand corner picture is what would look like if you were to slice the blastocyst in half. And you'll notice at the bottom right-hand corner of that picture, there's like a conglomeration of the cells that's labeled with a little, you can't read it, but it says ICM. That stands for inner cell mass. That little conglomeration at the bottom right-hand corner is is the pluripotent stem cells. So you get pluripotent stem cells from the blastocyst, which is what a human being looks like within at 4 to 6 days old, by you know, cutting it open or using some device to remove those stem cells from the blastocyst from a human being at 4 to 6 days old. Now, what's the function of those pluripotent stem cells in the blastocyst there for? What's their function? That's right. They create the body parts of every human being. So by removing the stem cells from an embryo, you're removing the very cells that the human being is going to use in order to create its body. And that's why removing stem cells from the embryo, human embryo, kills the human embryo, because then there's no possibility for the human to develop its body and create its spinal cord and its heart and its skin and its bones. Now, so any questions about so far where we're at? Stem cells are unspecialized cells. They become specialized, and we get them from human embryos at 4 to 6 days old. That's where we get pluripotent stem cells. Now, what do scientists want to do when they get these pluripotent stem cells? Well, it's rather easy. They want to take them out of a developing human embryo, and they want to coax them into turning into some kind of cell type. So in this example, I've made them turn into heart muscle tissue. And then they take that heart muscle tissue and they implant it into a damaged heart. Maybe somebody had a heart attack, and a heart attack is simply where a part of the muscle tissue in the heart has died, and so they want to implant this damaged tissue into someone's heart to repair it so that the heart functions, okay? Which is a very, very cool thing. Now, there's a problem when this happens. Let's just say, for example, it's Mark, right? I'm going to use you as an example, so I apologize in advance, but you'll get over it, okay? Let's just say Mark had damaged kidneys. Let's say you had two damaged kidneys that were basically failing, and we wanted to produce another kidney for you. So we took a human embryo, like that. We extracted the stem cells from that human embryo. We coaxed them into turning into a new kidney, and then we implanted that kidney into Mark's body. Now, what would Mark's body do with that kidney? It'd reject it. Why? That's right. It's not part of his body. It would be saying, well, this is clearly another human being's cells and DNA, and so it would reject it. And so, in fact, you know, nowadays when we do kidney transplants, most of these people have to go on anti-rejection medication, so that their body doesn't reject the organs that they've been transplanted with. It's a normal occurrence. And this is the problem with embryonic stem cell, or one of the problems with embryonic stem cell research, is that you create this new tissue, but when you implant it in someone else's body, the body's going to reject it. So that's not ideal. Now, this is where cloning comes in. Cloning attempts to solve the problem of rejection. Because if somehow you could create a tissue that was identically matched to Mark's DNA, then you wouldn't have the problem of rejection, would you? And so this is the solution. This is why embryonic stem cell research and cloning are so closely tied. Cloning is simply the process of trying to create, when we create this kidney or maybe new heart muscle tissue, tissue that is genetically identical to Mark. So cloning, all cloning really is a form of reproduction. You can create humans the old-fashioned way through sexual intercourse, or you can create humans through in vitro fertilization or in a petri dish, or you can create a human being through what's called cloning. And this is simply SCNT stands for somatic cell nuclear transfer, which is the most common form of cloning. And let me show you how you clone a human being. It's actually done in three easy steps. Don't try this at home. But here's what you would do if you wanted to clone, for example, Mark, because Mark's got a problem with his kidneys. Here's what you do. First, you got to get an egg, a female's egg. So we would find a willing female who's willing to donate her egg, and we would extract that egg from the woman's body, from her ovaries, which, as you can imagine, is not a straightforward process, but it's a surgery, right? So we got the woman's egg. Now, the woman's egg, though, has 23 of the woman's chromosomes. And we don't want those chromosomes in the egg because that's part of her DNA. We want only Mark's DNA. And so the first step in cloning is to remove the DNA, remove that nucleus that's in that woman's egg. That's the first step. The second step then is to take a cell from Mark's body, which has, by the way, how many chromosomes in all of Mark's cell bodies? 46, okay? So with the exception of his sperm cells, all of his body cells has 46 chromosomes. So we take a cell from Mark's body and we take the DNA nucleus out of there and we implant it in that egg that's had its DNA removed. So now there's Mark's DNA going into this egg. And so now this egg has all 46 chromosomes of Mark's in it. And as, in other words, we now have what occurs when a sperm and an egg meet. So normally when a sperm and an egg meet, they each bring 23 chromosomes and they form this egg with 46 chromosomes. And normally when sperm and egg meet in normal sexual intercourse union, you now have a new human being. In the case of cloning, when you take Mark's 46 chromosomes and put them in that egg, you now have a cell that is identical, genetically identical to Mark. And then all they do is they take that egg, give it a little spark, a little electrical stimulation, and then it starts to begin to grow into a genetic duplicate of Mark. So now you have this human embryo that is growing, that is genetically identical to Mark's body and genetics, Mark's DNA. Thank you, Mark, for participating in that experiment. Now, so that's all cloning is. Somatic cell nuclear transfer. Somatic means body, cell, you know, nuclear means the nucleus. So we're just transferring the nucleus from Mark into an egg that's had its nucleus removed. And then we stimulate it, it starts to grow. Now you can do two things with that growing human embryo that is genetically identical to Mark. The first thing you could do, potentially, is you could do reproductive cloning. And this is where we take that growing human embryo and find a willing female who is of appropriate age and implant that human embryo inside her uterus, just like we would in vitro fertilization, and it would grow, potentially, into a person who is like Mark. How old are you, Mark?
32.
It would be like having a late twin that is 32 years younger than Mark when it's born.
I do have an identical twin.
Oh, you do have an identical twin? Well, how about that? Well, just imagine that. Well, what are the chances, huh? So instead of having an identical twin that's your same age, it would be an identical twin that's 32 years younger than you. It would be growing up, you know, potentially, that looks just like you, eventually looks kind of like you. So that is reproductive cloning. This is currently banned in the United States. You know, people think that this is creepy and odd. And so we don't really kind of do this stuff in the United States. I mean, certainly people are trying elsewhere. But that is reproductive cloning. But there's another type of cloning, and that's called therapeutic cloning. And therapeutic cloning is identical to reproductive cloning in terms of creating what you're creating. The only difference of therapeutic cloning that is instead of taking that human embryo and implanting it in a woman's uterus, we take that human embryo and we strip its stem cells out of it, which of course causes the embryo, the human being, to die, and then we use those stem cells for research. And so what we want to do with that is we want to take that tissue from that human embryo that is identical to Mark, produce new heart muscle tissue or new kidney, implant it into Mark's body, and now guess what? There is no rejection taking place because it's just as if he's had his own body create an organ and then later implant it back in his body. And so this is why cloning is tied to embryonic stem cell research, because embryonic stem cell research can basically create the embryos that are genetically linked to the patient, and then that's what cloning does, and then embryonic stem cell research takes those cells, creates new tissue, and implants it in the body. Yes?
In terms of that being a therapeutic solution, being from the same genetic base, wouldn't that mean that he would have the same kidney problem at some time?
Yeah, that's a good question. So if the reason for Mark's kidney problems were genetic, then yeah, that could potentially be the same sort of genetic problem arise in the thing. But You know, not all conditions are genetic problems. You know, he could have had, you know, developed type 2 diabetes, and as a result of that, his kidneys just got destroyed as a result of that, and so then that would be a big deal. But you're right, I guess theoretically, potentially, any kind of genetic defects could arise in a future late twin of Mark. By the way, would that clone have a soul? Yeah, if it's a human being, why wouldn't it have a soul? And I think the answer is yeah. Does your twin brother have a soul, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's a good example because, you know, in essence, it's kind of like a late twin. And so in that sense, yeah, it would have a soul. Again, it would be weird, don't get me wrong, but it would be a human being just like anybody else. Any other questions, by the way, before we kind of move forward with sort of the moral question? Yeah, Mike.
It's less of a question than it is a comment. He's laughing. I'm going to heckle him, right?
Yeah, I know. That's right. I'm just waiting for this.
Your mama's... No, I'm kidding. it's interesting that we don't reproductively clone, though all cloning is reproductive because we're reproducing an offspring. Mm-hmm. We don't reproductively clone because it's creepy, but we therapeutically clone so that we can kill somebody.
Right.
I mean, it's interesting where our priorities are
as a
society, that it's creepy to produce life for the purpose of bringing it into the world, but not to produce it so we can destroy it.
That's right. In fact, you're absolutely right. And what happens in this situation is normally we say it's wrong to kill an innocent human being, right? If you go out and kill a person out in the streets, and that's you're guilty of a crime, and you're held accountable for that. In this case, you are guilty of a crime basically if you don't kill the human being. Because remember, reproductive cloning is currently banned, so you're not supposed to allow this person to grow. Once you create a human being via cloning, you have to kill it. So it's like the opposite situation. It's actually wrong to let it live, which, of course, is just throws your mind for a loop of the situation. But that's basically what's happening. Yeah, Casey.
Is the only time that you can get the stem cells from the... did you call it the soccer ball?
The blastocyst?
The
soccer ball, yeah.
In that early 4 to 6 day period, or can they get them at other times in development? That's one question. And the other is, I've heard that there are other ways you can get stem cells outside of an embryo. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, those are related questions. And the answer is yes, there are other times when you can get pluripotent stem cells, which we'll talk about in just a few minutes, and so yes, there are other sources. We'll talk about that for sure. Yeah. Any other questions or comments so far? What we covered? Yeah, Bob.
When you're taking those stem cells in that 4 to 5 day period of time, what's that called? What's that procedure called?
I don't know what the technical name is, but. Harvesting stem cell. I mean, I don't know. Well, I mean, there's probably some technical term.
Isn't that an abortion?
No. The abortion technically refers to a situation where you have a pregnant woman who ends her pregnancy, and that kills the unborn human being. It's like abortion in the sense of it's still killing an innocent human being, but it's kind of for a different reason. It's usually not inside a woman. So it's still the killing of an innocent human being, which is why I'm opposed to it. And which is why, notice the three tasks that we just talked about in making abortion thinkable can be applied directly to this, right? Because it doesn't matter that the unborn it doesn't matter that this human being is outside in a petri dish. The fact of the matter is it's still a human being, just like the unborn is inside a mother's body. And so to kill the unborn inside the mother's body is wrong, and to kill the human being in a petri dish would also be wrong for the same reason. And that's why those same arguments will work. You could still use the scientific arguments to show that the human being at the blastocyst stage is still a human being from the moment it was conceived. So yeah, it's still wrong. It's still killing an innocent human being. But we just wouldn't call it abortion because that's usually referring to when a woman is pregnant. But it's still wrong nonetheless. Does that make sense? Yeah. Good. Any other questions, comments? Okay, so what are the reasons then people say we should engage in embryonic stem cell research? Well, here's why. Embryonic stem cell research and cloning have the potential to treat disease and disability. Things like heart attacks, strokes, Parkinson's, cancer, all sorts of these diseases that humans can get are potentially treatable with embryonic stem cell research and cloning. Is that not a noble cause?
Yes.
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, why not be able to treat these things? So certainly it's a noble cause. Of course, the reason why we have reservations of saying yes is because the process entails the killing of innocent human beings, which of course is why we're morally opposed to it. Some people say there's a moral obligation. For example, Senator Tom Harkin of Iowa says this: it's morally wrong to oppose funding because the embryos are no bigger than a period at the end of a sentence. They do not have the capacity to become a human being. Now, that first sentence of his is rather peculiar. It's morally wrong to oppose the funding because the embryos are no bigger than a period at the end of a sentence. What does that sound like to you?
Because of size.
Remember we talked about the sled test? People disqualify some human beings from being valuable because of size, level of development, environment, degree of dependency. And who would have thought, does anybody really say you're so small you can't be worth it? Yeah, this guy can say it. Now, what about the second sentence? They do not have the capacity to become a human being. Is that true or false? What's that?
That's simply a falsehood.
Yeah, simply a falsehood. Do they have the capacity to become a human being? I disagree. They are a human being, that's right. They don't have the capacity to, they are human beings. So he's just simply speaking in a scientifically inaccurate way. Some people, in fact, many Christians argue that we have a theological mandate to support embryonic stem cell research and cloning. In fact, I have an article composed by several Christians that was published. It said, look, salvation includes the healing of both the body and the soul, right? We have a resurrected body that is glorified. And really, we're kind of, in essence, emulating God when we engage in this kind of research on earth. After all, didn't Jesus specifically engage in acts of healing of physical bodies when, as a part of his ministry? So how are we not being like Christ? What would Jesus do? WWJD? He would heal people. He often did. In fact, we probably don't know how many other people he healed while he was alive, at least, you know, in the New Testament era, that were even recorded. There's probably hundreds more. So this is also another reason why we should engage in this kind of research. Don't you agree?
No.
Why not?
It is because
he didn't kill in order to heal.
That's right. Yeah, he did not kill innocent human beings in the process of healing others. So he kind of... That's true. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so but that's another reason why people argue for stem cell research and cloning. Michael Kinsley, who is a well-known columnist, says that the embryos that we're talking about aren't human beings or persons. Here's what he says. Look, we're not talking about we are talking about newly formed embryos. These are not fetuses with tiny waving hands and feet. These are microscopic groupings of a few differentiated cells. There's nothing human about them, he writes. All right, well, let's talk about this. We're talking here about newly formed embryos. Is that true?
No, they're 5 days old.
Well, but technically they are newly formed. I mean, 5 days old is rather new, right? He's right. We are talking about newly formed embryos, but that's somewhat irrelevant. He says this: these are not fetuses with tiny waving hands and feet. Is that true?
Yes.
It's true. They're not fetuses with tiny waving hands and feet. Why are they not fetuses with tiny waving hands and feet? Because we kill them before they ever become fetuses. But that's beside the point, all right? These are microscopic groupings of a few differentiated cells. Is that true? Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is true. There's nothing human about them. Is that true?
No.
No. Oh, how is it that these people on national television, on national publications, can get away saying scientifically, factually incorrect things? I don't know, but he does it. Maybe, yeah. If you say it long enough, people will believe it. That's right. But this is the kind of stuff that people say. All right, Mary Tyler Moore. How many have heard of Mary Tyler Moore, the actress? She has type 1 diabetes. It's a form. It's called juvenile diabetes. So. She's in essence kind of born with this condition. And she's testified before Congress in arguing for embryonic stem cell research and cloning. And here's what she says. The embryos that are being discussed, according to science, bear as much resemblance to a human being as a goldfish. Is that true? Well, I mean, they don't look like a human being, do they? They look like a soccer ball.
They don't look like a human being.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. They don't look like adult human beings. They look like blastocyst human beings. That's right. But what part of sled test is she violating there? Yeah, it could. Yeah, appearance and size, the S. But yeah, I guess development also, because it's not really developed into a human-like looking thing.
But she didn't but, look like Mary Tyler Moore when she was.
That's true. She didn't look like that either. That's true. That's true. Ron Reagan, who is the son of President Ronald Reagan, in 2004 went to the Democratic National Convention and gave a speech arguing in favor of why we should have federal funding of embryonic stem cell research and cloning. And here's what he said in his speech, among other things. He says, yes, these cells could theoretically have the potential under very different circumstances to develop into a human being. That potential is where the magic lies, he says, but they are not in and of themselves human beings. They have no fingers, no toes, no brain, no spinal cord. They have no thoughts, no fears. They feel no pain. But instead, we have young little girls who do have fingers and toes and spinal cord and fears and pain, and these are the ones we should be caring about, not the non-humans. So, okay, let's see. These cells could theoretically have the potential under different circumstances to develop into human beings. Is that true or false? False. Why is it false? They are human beings. That's right. He says they are not in and of themselves human beings. Again, how can he get up on a national stage and say things that are just factually inaccurate? But they do. They say it all the time. They have no fingers and toes, no brain, no spinal cord. Is that true? That's right. At the 4 to 6 days, do they have a brain and spinal cord? No. Do they have toes?
No.
So he's right. But the reason why they don't have those things is because, again, we're going to kill them before they ever develop them. They have no thoughts, no fears. They feel no pain. Of course not. They don't, you know, because they haven't developed yet that far. He goes on to say, and this is something that you're going to have to remember for a few minutes later, but listen to what he says. And think about what he's describing here. Because imagine going to a doctor. Instead of prescribing drugs, he takes a few skin cells from your arm. The nucleus of one of your cells is placed into a donor egg whose own nucleus has been removed. A bit of chemical or electrical stimulation will encourage your cell's nucleus to begin dividing, creating new cells which will then be placed into a tissue culture. What has he just described?
Cloning.
Remember I talked about the three steps of cloning? He just described it to a T. But he never says the word cloning. You can Google his speech and search for the word cloning. He'll never say cloning in the thing because it'll freak people out. But he just described somatic cell nuclear transfer. Then he goes on to say, these cells, you know, these are just random cells. Of course, he doesn't mention the fact that they are working as a cohesive whole because they're a human being, but or whatever. He says, these cells will generate embryonic stem cells containing only your DNA, for which we did for Mark, thereby eliminating the risk of tissue rejection. How would you like to have your own personal biological repair kit standing by at the hospital? Sound like magic? Welcome to the future of medicine. Kind of creepy, huh? Your own biological repair kit. Take your brother, you know, instead of having him do whatever he does now, let's just stick him in the hospital and just have him sitting around waiting so that when you get sick, we can just pull organs from his body and use them for your benefit. I mean, that sounds like hyperbole, but that's in essence what he's arguing. It's just at a different stage of development. But remember this whole notion of having your personal biological repair kit, because we're going to come back to that. He says, oh, by the way, for all you freaky Christians who think that this is whacked, you're whacked, but let me tell you, by the way, no fetal tissue is involved in this process. No fetuses are created, none are destroyed. This all happens in the laboratory at the cellular level. Is he right? No fetuses are created and destroyed?
No, because that's what an embryo is.
Well, technically he's right. There are no fetuses created because fetuses is simply a human being at after 10 weeks old. Right. So instead, the reason why none of them are created is because we kill the human beings before they ever reach the fetal stage. That's why we don't create them, and that's why we're not technically destroying them. So he's just using language in a tricky way to basically convince people of his ideas. Now, if you haven't already figured this out, the case for embryonic stem cell research and cloning in this particular way is flawed for many reasons, but the most obvious one is that you have to kill a human being in order to harvest his stem cells, and this is why we think it's wrong. It basically treats human beings as nothing more than disposable material that can be used for someone else's benefit. It just uses human beings as little harvesting kind of creatures that we can just pull their organs out and use them for other people's benefit.
Alan,
yes?
I'm sure you're well aware that throughout much of the third world, people are being kidnapped and then kidneys extracted and sold on the black market.
Yeah, that's true. I am aware of that. People are kidnapped and often have their organs removed from them after they've been knocked out, of course, and then those organs are sold in the black market. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a similar thing, but this will make it, this is a legal way of doing it. Why do it in a legal way? We could do it in a legal way. Now, some people say, well, wait a minute. There's all of these, human embryos that are stored in around the country in these, basically refrigerators, who are left over from fertility clinics. Some people say, and this statistic is a little bit outdated, probably 6 or 7 years old, so they say, look, there's like 500,000 embryos, human embryos, sitting in freezers around the country. And look, they're going to die anyways. Might as well use them for stem cell research. Let's take them, grab their stem cells, and use them for research. So they'll come to some benefit. Now, where do we get these 500,000 embryos? Well, it's because, for the most part, these are left over from fertility clinics, where you have a husband and a wife who try to have kids, they can't, and so they start using fertility services. And so they say they take a sperm from the father, the husband, and an egg from the wife, and it maybe take 3 or 4 or so, and they create these human embryos in vitro, meaning in a petri dish. And so maybe they'll create 10 human embryos. They'll implant 3 in the wife. Of those 3, maybe 1 will survive, and so they have 1 kid. They'll take another 3 from that batch and implant them in the wife, and maybe they'll have another kid. So they'll have 2 kids, or maybe 3 kids. And then they're like, okay, we're done having kids, but now there's 4 human embryos left over that they don't need. So they put them in a freezer, like these, and these human embryos are now sitting in a freezer. And so with thousands and thousands of couples doing this year after year, we now have a buildup of hundreds of thousands of human embryos that are sitting in freezers around our country. Now, the problem really becomes, well, what do we do with them? Now, first of all, it's not the case that all 500,000 of them are available for research, because actually a lot of them are slated to be implanted in the husband and wife who created them. But even if we have what estimates put probably now at about 50,000 that are available for research, the CDC and many other health organizations point out that there's millions of women who are infertile and want to have kids of their own and would like to be able to use these and adopt them out, basically. So in other words, there's far more couples out there that are struggling with infertility that would be willing to adopt these frozen embryos and have them for their own kids. So it turns out there's actually an option for these frozen embryos sitting around, these frozen humans sitting around in freezers. Now you might be thinking, well, wait a minute. What are you going to adopt a frozen embryo and like thaw it out like it would an ice cube or a popsicle or something? And the answer is yes. In fact, we've been doing this for many, many years. There's an organization called Snowflakes, one of which is located in my area. And in fact, the first woman to adopt a frozen embryo, she lives just 10 minutes from my house. She testified before Congress during the Bush administration. But there's now this growing movement saying, hey, look, instead of using these human beings for research, let's give them the best chance for life. Let's adopt them out and thaw them from the freezers and then implant these human embryos in women who want to have children. In fact, here is a picture, an actual picture of 2 girls that I know personally, Catherine and Claire. Now, these are pictures of what they looked like when they were just 5 days old. Catherine and Claire were created as a result of fertility clinic services, and they were put in a freezer. Catherine on the left was frozen for 5 years. Claire on the right was frozen for 8 years. And then my friend who lives near to me, she adopted them. The doctors took them out, thawed them, implanted them in her uterus at different times, not both at the same time. And then she grew them. They both survived. She had 2 kids. And now here are Catherine and Claire at the top left corner. 2 normal kids. By the way, those are my kids in the picture. You notice Catherine and Claire are sitting next to them. And these kids are just like any other normal kid. They run around and play. They talk. They do all sorts of things. The only thing that's a little bit odd is they feel cool to the touch because they've been frozen for... No, I'm just kidding. They're not. They don't feel cold. But no, seriously, they're just like anybody else. We don't have to use these kids as experiments for research. We have a chance to put them up for adoption and have them have a chance at life. And the success rate, by the way, of snowflake embryo adoptions is like 70-80%. At least this was when my friend adopted them. Yes, question, comment.
Will the biological parents have a say in this?
Well, the biological parents would, in the same way that normal adoption occurs, do the same kind of thing. You go through adoption procedure where you give up the rights to the thing. So if there are some differences because frozen embryos don't have the same kind of status as typical children that are running around. But in essence, it works out to be the same thing, and that is they are fully adopting them. Now, in this case, my friend knows the biological parents. Yes?
I'm gathering that you feel that it's okay
to do this procedure, to create this life in a petri dish and transplant it into a person. Is that right? Do you think that's... okay.
Well,
acceptable.
No. What I'm saying is, the ones that are currently frozen in freezers around the country, mm-hmm. instead of killing them and taking their body parts for research, I'm saying the better thing to do, given the fact that we have thousands of human beings frozen, is to thaw them out and give them a chance at living by adopting them out. I'm not saying we should go and create embryos for the purpose of putting them in this like this.
So, in other words, you're not necessarily for creating the embryos in the first place.
Well, you mean through in vitro fertilization and fertility clinics?
Yeah.
Well, it depends. Are you asking me from a moral perspective or from like a practical, how should we as Christians live perspective?
Yeah.
The latter?
Yeah.
Well, I would say to a couple who's struggling with infertility, well, actually, if I was to be a pastoral counsel to people who are considering getting married, I would work through these questions long before they ever tie the knot. Because once you're in the situation where you are now dealing with infertility, a lot of reasoning goes out the door. And I don't say that in a mean way, because I understand when my wife and I first wanted to have kids, we couldn't get pregnant. In fact, it took us 4 years where we basically realized or thought we're infertile. And we tried year after year at having kids. Now, 4 years is a long time. And if anyone else here knows someone, or perhaps they themselves have struggled with infertility, what it does to a woman is really damaging. I mean, she literally felt defective as a female. Mm-hmm. And it caused her in untold amounts of grief to think that she can't ever have kids. So given that, in that circumstance, we were like, she was like, I'll do anything to have kids. And literally, it was like she was being irrational. Now, maybe other women wouldn't be like that. I'm not trying to pick on my wife, but she admits that even now in retrospect, that she may have been willing to make decisions that she would think under normal circumstances are wrong. So my suggestion is, before you ever get married or soon before you ever start trying to have kids, you got to resolve to understand something very significantly important, and that is this. If you're going to do in vitro fertilization, at least plan on creating the amount of human beings that you're willing to implant in your own body. And don't add to this growing hundreds of thousands of human embryos that are sitting out now in freezers that potentially are going to now die just because you're willing to do whatever it is to have kids. Now, I'm not, this is a sticky situation because I understand the feelings people have, but I'm not about saying, like, don't use any scientific technology to get pregnant. I'm okay with that. And I'm going to talk specifically about cloning as well in a second. I'm not opposed to creating human beings the other way, but just don't make it additionally difficult by creating too many such that you have all these leftover human beings that we're throwing in a freezer and treating like like, I don't know, less than valuable, less than persons, you know? You would never do that with a 2-year-old, stick him in a freezer, because you're just like, okay, I'm done with you for a little while, you know?
Okay, so, then the other part of the question is, if those, say, 2 or 3 embryos are planted in a woman's uterus,
yes,
knowing that probably they won't all survive.
You mean the ones that are frozen and then implanted?
Well,
or before and then in vitro?
Before.
Okay.
Yeah. And knowing, is that not taking life?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a good question. So is it morally permissible then to create human beings through in vitro fertilization, knowing full well that not 100% of them will survive? Well, here's the I understand what you're getting at, and I see the problem. The thing is that just regular sexual intercourse, where you create a human being that way, I mean, I think like a third of all humans that are created through natural sexual intercourse end in abortion, spontaneous abortion. So it isn't just the case that if you have a child the normal way, through sexual union, that you're going to have a human being that will survive that process. A lot of them die, a third of them die. So, you know, you have to kind of factor that into the realization that, you know, yeah, if you do it through in vitro, I don't know what the statistics are, whether it's more or less likely, but, you know, but that I just would say that's what you'd have to keep in mind in the process, that even through natural union you have that happening. Was there a question? I thought there was a hand over here.
She asked me.
Okay.
Because I was just going to say, because I understand from fertilization clinics, the majority of people that go to them
yes.
are instructed that most of the embryos will not survive. Is it
most of them, okay?
Yeah, most of them die, regardless of whatever mm-hmm. environment they're in.
Yeah.
And so therefore, it's acceptable to create more mm-hmm. for the need of the fact that the attrition rate or the survival rate is so low.
Yeah. I mean, this is kind of goes to the whole, all the problems that arise as a result of advancement of technology. We can do certain things now, but they create all these other problems. And I know with in vitro fertilization, it's very costly to do this. So to create just 3 human embryos and then implant them and only end up having 2 kids and you want 3 and then you have to go back and do that again, well, that process is tens of thousands of dollars. And that's why they say, hey, look, when you go in to do that, just take all 10 out, you know, create 10. And so that's why there's a motivation, because the financial costs are so prohibitive that's why they do it. So again, it creates problems. But that's why I say you got to decide these things before you ever start having kids, because once you start having kids, you're too emotionally invested in the process, and oftentimes you don't think rationally about the decisions. Now, on the morality of cloning, you know, again, this kind of gets to the same issue you're talking about. Well, is it morally permissible to create these human embryos? Is it morally permissible to create clones? Well, here's how I would say this, because most times I'm talking to secular audiences. I go to secular universities, I go to medical schools and present these things, and obviously the audience is primarily hostile towards my views. So, and I'm not going to present I'm not going to present a biblical argument, so I have to kind of go from a practical view. And here's what I say about cloning. I say, I'm not opposed to cloning per se. In other words, I'm not opposed to creating a human being just because it's weird that we would clone somebody, although I think it's weird, and there are probably arguments that could be made as to why we should not clone. But here's my primary concern that I present to secular audiences as to why I'm opposed to cloning. I'm opposed to cloning primarily because once we create these clones will be treated as less than valuable. They'll always be seen as less than human, or maybe they'll be human, but less than persons. They'll always be seen as means to an end rather than an end in themselves. In other words, clones will always be seen as, hey, let's just create this thing so that we can use it as our own personal biological repair kit that we just leave in the hospital, and when we get sick, we'll pull parts from them. Now, what's interesting is Hollywood actually made a movie about this very thing. How many ever saw the movie The Island? Raise your hand if you ever saw the movie The Island. Anybody seen this movie? Just Mike?
No.
Was it Leonardo?
Was that?
Was it Leonardo?
No, it's not that island. That's a different... No, this was with Ewan McGregor, who plays Obi-Wan Kenobi in the first 3 episodes of Star Wars, and Scarlett Johansson, and a bunch of other famous actors, but they created a movie. It's actually based on a book, I think, isn't it right? Yeah, it's based on a book. Yeah, that's right. So it's based on a book, but the story of in the movie is probably like, say, 20 or 30 years in the future, where we've kind of perfected cloning. And what they're doing is they create these clones based on human beings who have illnesses. So if you have a skin disease, or you need a new heart, or a new liver, or a new lung, you pay this company to create a clone of you. Now, the people who are having these clones created don't know what's going on. They're just paying money, and this company, which basically has these clones underground in an abandoned military bunker, is creating these clones which grow up eventually to be just regular human beings like you and I. They don't know they're clones. They just think they're human beings stuck in this weird place because from birth they've just been living in this underground bunker. And they've been told that the earth is like all a disease and you can't go live out on the earth. So they're kind of bought into the story that they got to live underground. Well, eventually when they grow old enough, they take their body parts and give them to the people who had them basically cloned out here in kind of the real world. Now, I want to show you a video clip of this movie where two of the clones escape out of this bunker, walk out into the world like, wait a minute, we're outside here on Earth and we're okay. And they run to a local town and they run into an employee of this cloning company. And this employee kind of feels bad for them, and so he starts to explain to them their, who they are. And so this is the scene that we're gonna watch here.
Why do they lie, Mac? Why do they lie to us? Tell me. To keep you from knowing what you are. What we are?
What are we?
Oh, man, why do I gotta be the guy that tells the kids there's no Santa Claus? Okay, look, you're, well, you're not like me. I mean, you're not, human. I mean, you're human, but you're just, you're not real. You're not like a real person, like me. You're clones. You're copies of people out here in the world.
What?
Clones?
What?
Copies? What are you talking
Why?
About?
Some hag trophy wife needs new skin for a facelift, or one of them gets sick and they need a new part. They take it from you. The whole reason you exist is because everyone wants to live forever. It's the new American dream. And there's people out there that are rich enough to pay anything for it.
Don't people care that they kill us? That they take parts from us?
They don't know. They think you're vegetables simmering in a jelly sack. Why do you think Merrick has you stuck in an old military bunker below ground? He doesn't want anybody knowing the truth, especially not your sponsors.
Sponsors?
The people that had you made. They, like, own you.
But why doesn't Merrick want our owners to know that we're alive?
Just because people want to eat the burger doesn't mean they want to meet the cow.
So, you know, this is a really interesting movie because they bring up this issue of cloning and using body parts for other people, but then they basically claim that it's a bad idea. They say, look at what this leads to. Now, obviously, embryonic stem cell research and cloning in our world isn't about growing them to be this far. But again, it's only a matter of level development. That's the only difference. We're still doing the same exact thing, except we're killing them long before they get this old. So, very interesting for that reason. Also, notice what he said. He goes, she asked, well, don't our sponsors, you know, care that they kill us? And what did he say? He goes, they just think you're vegetables simmering in a jelly sack. In other words, they've been told that you're just a clump of cells, which is precisely what Planned Parenthood and the abortion movement has told women. Oh, it's not a child, it's just a clump of cells, you know? It's a few differentiated cells. You know, it's just tissue. And so the same kind of deception is going on in this movie. Anyways, I encourage you to watch it because it's rather interesting that they take this issue and raise it and then kind of take our side on the issue. So the question really then is, can we achieve the same potential benefits that embryonic stem cell research promises will happen? Like healing people of cancer and strokes and heart disease and whatever. Can we do this without killing innocent human beings? And the answer is yes, we can, through what's called adult stem cell research. And it's an alternative, basically, to this whole stem cell research and cloning kind of model. And adult stem cells are simply stem cells that are found in every one of our bodies. They're found in bone marrow, they're found in blood, they're found in our skin, they're found in our bones, they're found in our eyes, they're found virtually everywhere. Because remember, I said stem cells are self-renewing. So from the day you were just a zygote and your stem cells started to reproduce, whenever they created parts of your body, they also created another one of themselves. And so right now, when you cut your skin and your skin heals back, it's because you have stem cells that reproduce and create new skin tissue for you. Now, originally, people thought, well, these adult stem cells are what's called unipotent, right? Remember we talked about unipotent or multipotent? They thought that adult stem cells don't have the power to turn into virtually any kind of stem cell. I'm sorry, to turn into virtually any kind of human cell. And so now they're realizing that's not the case. Most stem cells in the adult body now turn out to be actually pluripotent, meaning they have the potential to turn into any type of cell. Moreover, researchers from Harvard and elsewhere now around the world have confirmed that they can take an adult stem cell and just reprogram it, and it now functions like an embryonic stem cell. In other words, it has all the benefits of stem cells from embryos, but without killing a single human being. These are called induced pluripotent stem cells, IPS. So now we have the ability, literally, and even before they did those, to literally take stem cells from your body and use them for stem cell research without killing a single person. So what are the advantages? Well, here's the first one, most obvious. Innocent human beings don't have to be killed with adult stem cells. Consent can be granted. I can ask you, Mark, could I borrow a couple of stem cells from your skin? You say, sure, Alan, go ahead. You know, pull it out. Well, you can't ask, obviously, a human embryo, a blastocyst, because after all, it has no waving hands and feet, right? No need to clone human beings. Now there's no need to clone because tissue rejection isn't a factor. If I take adult stem cells from Mark, create new tissue for it, and put it back into his body, there's no tissue rejection. So you don't need to do cloning either. You eliminate the genetic instability of cloned stem cells. A lot of cloned cells that are taken from embryos are just turning into tumors and all sorts of crazy things. They're very unstable. Well, you don't have that same instability with adult stem cells. You also eliminate the potential harm to women who are, shall we say, coerced into selling their eggs. In fact, there's now a documentary called Eggsploitation, which is a documentary showing how women are being exploited because they're willing to, you know, get money in return for donating their eggs. Well, as I said, giving away your eggs isn't like giving away sperm. It's a rather complicated process that has potential for harm. And also I mentioned that adult stem cells can be induced into pluripotency, meaning they can be encouraged to be basically any cell type. And here's the kicker. Adult stem cells turn out to be more promising to cure diseases and disabilities than embryonic stem cells. And I want to give you a couple of examples of that before we close. For example, the New England Journal of Medicine, which is a very reputable world, in the world, it's considered as a very reputable journal. But they did a study on on blindness in people who have their cornea, which is like the kind of like the lens of your eye, turns opaque, which means you can't see through it, in some individuals, either through a condition known as Stevens-Johnson syndrome, and in some people who get electrical burns or chemical burns, sometimes this happens to their eye, and they become blind in an eye. And so they said, okay, well, let's try to use adult stem cells to deal with this. So here's what they do. They go to their other eye, they extract some stem cells from their other eye, and they implant it on a membrane, and they grow a new cornea. It's kind of hard to see, but they grow a new cornea. They cut off the old cornea, put the new cornea on their eye, and now they've cured blindness, and the person can see, using a person's own adult stem cells. And notice the date. They were doing this 12 years ago in human beings. In fact, an Italian study that just got published 2 years ago has improved in the process. Now they don't even create this membrane where they grow a new cornea. They literally tear off the damaged cornea, as seen on the left side, take stem cells, implant them directly on the person's eye, and it grows a new cornea for them. And in this particular study, treatment worked completely in 82 out of 107 eyes. It worked partially for 14 others, and a guy with severely damaged eyes for 60 years has now near normal vision because they use adult stem cells. Very amazing. Bartolo, who used to be a New York Yankees pitcher, I think he now pitches for the Oakland Athletics. But, you know, as with all pitchers, there's a lot of potential for damage in their rotator cuff and in their elbow and in the ligaments because they're pitching so hard, they eventually get damaged. So he had a rotator cuff tear, which is a common shoulder injury, and ligament damage in his elbow. They took stem cells from the guy's bone marrow, cleaned them up, inserted them, and used them to repair his pitching arm. And now he's back to pitching in professional baseball. It's phenomenal what they can do. A journal called Circulation, which is another respected journal in the scientific realm, dealing with primarily, obviously, heart and blood stuff. But what they would do in this case is they take stem cells from a person's bones, from their pelvic bones. They clean them out, and they insert them in a syringe, and then they use that syringe to send a catheter down into the damaged part of their heart. Now, in the bottom right-hand corner of that heart, you see it's blue. That's the part that's died. The muscle tissue is died because the person had a heart attack. So literally, they remove the clog from the person's artery that caused that initial damage. They insert the catheter in. They literally just shoot the stem cells into that person's damaged heart, and it begins to regrow that person's heart tissue and help alleviate the damaged tissue, and now their heart functions better. They're treating heart attacks. Look at the date. 10 years ago, they were doing this. Now, they've actually perfected this even better. They literally take the stem cells from a person's bone there. They put in a syringe and just directly use that syringe directly onto the damaged heart muscle tissue and infuse it in there, and it regrows heart muscle tissue. This is like science fiction that Ron Reagan was talking about. Science fiction? No. Yeah. This is science fiction. We're helping not cure heart attacks, but we're helping to address heart attack patients. And then probably one of the most remarkable situations, a man had a cancerous tumor growing in his trachea, his windpipe. And it completely obliterated his windpipe. They said this man's going to die. But what did? They removed the cancerous tumor out of his windpipe, thereby also having to remove his windpipe. They took adult stem cells, created an artificial, they created a real trachea from his own adult stem cells. These are real pictures of a real trachea, implanted it back into the guy's body, and now he's got a new trachea from his own adult stem cells, and now has a normal prognosis. They're creating windpipes out of your own adult stem cells. It's phenomenal what they can do, all through adult stem cell research. And so if you were to look at the different treatments that they've used adult stem cells in humans with, the list is like 73 different kinds of conditions that have been treated using adult stem cell. Stroke, blindness, heart attack, lupus, I mean, you go on. And this research has been done for now, 20, almost 30 years they've been treating treating human beings with adult stem cell research. How many human beings have been treated with embryonic stem cell research? Does anybody know? How many different conditions have been treated using embryonic stem cell research?
Zero.
They are now undergoing some clinical trials that they're trying to use, but for the most part, there's been no treatments using embryonic stem cell research to treat human beings using embryonic stem cells.
Well, why would they even want to?
Why would they even want to?
Yeah.
You mean, religion.
Yeah, that's right. You mean, why would they want to then still pursue embryonic stem cell research?
Why would they want to when this is so successful?
Yeah, good question. Well, here's two answers that they say, and I'll give you two that I speculate. One is they say this, and I don't know if this is a good argument anymore, but they say this. Embryonic stem cells serve as what's called a gold standard in pluripotency. In other words, when you get an embryonic stem cell, it has the ability to turn into any cell type in the human body, and we need this as kind of a standard by which we can assess adult stem cells and their ability to turn into any cell. Of course, in my estimation, that has been blown away now with what most researchers in Harvard and other parts of the country, and I'm sorry, the world, have found, and that is you can induce even adult stem cells to turn into embryonic stem cells. So that's one reason. But here are a couple other reasons that I would speculate are related to that. One is there's probably a lot more money in embryonic stem cell research and cloning, because cloning in itself requires a whole new field of research that is involved. And so as a result, you know, entire careers can be built around research grants surrounding cloning. Another reason I would suggest is that, you know, scientists think, look, if it can be done, it should be done. Why should we limit scientific research? What's the problem? You know, it's not like we're killing human beings. That's just the religious freaks, you know, the people that go to New Life Anglican Church who think that there's something wrong with that. But they're whacked. They're just the religious right fundamentalist freaks, and religion has no place in science. And so that's kind of their view. My suspicion also is that if we say, well, wait a minute, look at all the things that adult stem cells have done. We don't need to do the more controversial embryonic stuff. If we say, okay, we agree, then it's almost there's a sense in which they're saying that embryonic stem cell research is morally problematic, which might erode abortion rights. You know, because then they're conceding that there's something wrong with embryonic stem cell research. So I'd say all of these probably contribute to it in some manner, that people are still saying, you know, we should go with this. You know, Michael J. Fox, I don't know if you guys know, Michael J. Fox, the actor, was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease maybe, I don't know, 10 years ago or more. And he has been an outspoken proponent for embryonic stem cell research for years now. Just this year, he changed his tune. And he changed his tune because he realized embryonic stem cell research is not going to cure anything in his lifetime. In fact, now he's more open to adult stem cell research. On Oprah Winfrey's television show, which I guess she doesn't have her show anymore, but Dr. Mahmoud Oz or something. I think he's like a Lebanese.
Oz.
Yeah, Oz. Well, anyway, whatever his name. He's like the famous doc. He's like Dr. Phil, but is a.
Ahmed.
Yeah, Ahmed. Ahmed? Yeah, whatever. That guy. He was on Oprah Winfrey's television show with Michael J. Fox. And of course, Michael J. Fox is pushing his embryonic stem cell stuff. And Dr. Oz says, you know what's amazing now, what we can do? We can take cells from your body, pull them off your skin, you know, clean them up, make them turn into some other tissue, and then implant them back in a person's body. And we can treat using stem cells, you know? And of course, Michael J. Fox is sitting there thinking, that's not what I'm advocating, you know? But he did it right in front of Michael J. Fox. And so I don't know if that contributed to changing Michael J. Fox's mind, but he's now definitely changing his tune with regards to this.
Well,
so, would Michael J. Fox benefit from adult cell stem research? Possibly. I don't know. I haven't looked at what's been done in the field of Parkinson's. I know they've tried it with embryonic stem cell research. And unfortunately, despite all the risks, there's been children in all parts of the world. I know one story in Israel where a child had some condition in the brain and they wanted embryonic stem cell research. And of course, American researchers and doctors said, no, it's too dangerous. They're too unstable. They put him in his brain. And all sorts of tumors just started sprouting in his brain. It was just so sad, you know. But, you know, I don't know if his situation was life-threatening or not. It may have been. But anyways, there just isn't a lot of promise at this point, although they keep claiming there's promise for embryonic stem cell research. Good. Other questions, comments? Yeah, Wally.
I know it's warm and I'm tired. And so I just want to make sure I'm clear on one issue. We've talked about embryonic stem cell research, and I understand how that's the loss of life because we take the stem cells out of the embryo.
Yes.
And therefore destroy life. But in cloning, specifically reproductive cloning,
mm-hmm.
you're taking an unfertilized egg from a woman,
mm-hmm.
inserting DNA from somebody else,
mm-hmm.
and then growing that in the uterus of a woman to produce another child. There's no loss of life in that.
Correct.
But it's just a weird way to produce life.
Correct. Yeah, you got it absolutely right. And that's why I say I'm not against cloning per se. It's not that creating a human being in this weird way is, you know, immoral. Although it could be argued from a theological standpoint that it is. I'm not, you know, you could say, well, we're playing God, and, you know, there's all sorts of things you could say about that. But my primary concern is, since we're not doing reproductive cloning, the reason I'm concerned with it is because we're only doing therapeutic cloning, which means that every clone that's created, which is a human being, is seen as a means to an end, and not their own end, someone else's end. And just like in the island, where they eventually lay them down on a surgical table and take a saw and cut through their body and chest and pull out their lung or whatever and put in somebody else, that's the way clones will always be viewed, as just simply a biological repair kit waiting at the hospital for you, just like Ron Regan said. And that's why I'm concerned with cloning, is because we'll always devalue these human beings as less than valuable, less than persons. Any other comments, questions, or concerns? It's heavy stuff. Before we go, or before I step down, I'm just going to mention, for those of you who probably weren't here last year, I passed out this. This has a section of it. It's the blue part of the card. Has a little outline of what's called the Columbo tactic. And as you know, I've already taught a number of tactics today. But the Columbo tactic is another tactic that we teach about how to use questions to be able to kind of productively move forward in a religious conversation about any subject. And we get it, the Columbo tactic, from the TV show Columbo, for those of you who have ever seen Peter Falk play the mastermind detective. And he always used questions. And so we kind of capitalized on that and created this tactic called the Columbo tactic. So this is something that you can just kind of look at and keep in your back pocket or your purse or whatever you do for you. There's a white card that's attached to it, and that's for me. And we put out every 2 months something called Solid Ground. And Solid Ground is written by my boss, Greg Kokel, and it's an article arguing for some apologetic issue. And this one, it's called Who Says God is Good? And it's about the problem of evil and whether the problem of evil is an argument against God's existence or not, because many atheists claim that it is. And in this article, he responds to this claim and actually shows how, in fact, the problem of evil or the existence of evil turns out to be evidence for God's existence, not evidence against God's existence. And so he explains about how that is. And so if you're interested in things like that, Greg writes a different kind of topic every 2 months. Sometimes it's on abortion. Sometimes it's on same-sex marriage. Sometimes it's on evolution or why is Jesus the only way or the Bible's reliability. So if you're interested in getting that, all you got to do is tell us where you live. And so this card has a place for you to put your name and address. Now, if you, by default, we send an email version of this. But if you want a physical paper mailed to you like this, just check the box that says, I would like to receive the print version. We recently made this change because there's a lot of people who don't want paper mailed to them. Although I kind of still like it. Do you get the paper version, Mike? Or you get the email version? Okay.
You get both?
Okay, yeah, so you can get both. But so if you want the paper version, I encourage you to check the little box that says, give me the paper version. If not, if you just want a digital version sent by email, make sure you include your email address, and that way we'll know. Okay, so it's free, doesn't cost anything. So if you're interested, sign up for that. And be sure to give this to me before you walk out today. Just throw it on the table or just give it to me. Yeah, let me close in prayer and then we can be dismissed. And I'll hang around, of course, still if there's any other kinds of questions. Father, we thank you for this opportunity to be able to get together as kindred spirits and talk about some of these difficult things. Islam this morning and abortion and stem cell research and cloning. And Lord, we want to be informed believers because we are speaking to a world that is hostile to the Christian worldview, that is hostile to your principles, that is hostile to your truth. And I pray that days like today and the material that we cover can be used in the cause of claiming your truth and to persuading others of it. And Lord, may we, as we do that, be reminded of the fact that we are ambassadors for your Son, Jesus, that we represent your Son in everything we do, however we come across to other people, ultimately reflects upon that the good name of your Son, Jesus. And so may we be mindful that we should talk about these things in a winsome and gracious way, of course being persuasive, of course being incisive, of course trying to really destroy false claims to truth and the hostile views of the world. But may we do that always in a way that is winsome and gracious so that we can bring honor and glory to your name. Amen.